Hey, patrons and YouTube members, and welcome back to your exclusive weekly patron cast. This time it's season 3, episode 31, and there are only two things I want to talk about. The first one is YouTube adding auto-translations powered by AI, and for once it's an AI feature I think has some merits to it, so we'll discuss it. And then it's channel-related stuff, the videos I published, how well they did, the last video that the agency is working on, which is not coming along very well, honestly, and me working on the MacBook Pro to make the latest Linux news video, and how it sort of made me fix a few of the issues I had with the Mac that I discussed in my previous video, but also how I still don't think it's a great product. So, let's begin with YouTube translations. So for now, if you wanted to publish a YouTube video in multiple languages, you either have to use subtitles, and you can either submit your own subtitles or let YouTube auto-translate them for you, or you can submit multiple videos with different audio tracks on different channels, or on the same channel if you prefer, but YouTube is not a big fan of that kind of stuff. So you would probably have to create, for example, if I wanted to publish videos in French as well as in English, I would probably have to start a French channel where I publish some of my videos or all my videos re-recorded in French or dubbed in French. But I could not offer the same video with two different audio tracks, which kind of sucks because I don't want to rework the video. I don't want to handle multiple channels. I don't want to handle multiple videos, multiple sets of comments. It's not practical and it's not fun. I would much rather have one video with multiple audio tracks and just like handle everything on the same video with the same same number of views. It's much better. And so YouTube is implementing something along those lines. It's called Allowed, which is apparently a feature they had in their like internal incubator for some time, and it will automatically dub videos with an AI-generated voice. And they'll start with English, with Spanish, and with Portuguese, but they have plans for Hindi, Indonesian, and they'll probably add more and more languages as time goes by, probably starting with the languages that have like the most speakers, I guess. They will probably proceed with the languages that have the most native speakers. And it will make YouTube even less likely to be dethroned by any potential competitor, because if they have the full breadth of content that YouTube already has, which is already available on YouTube, and everything that is still being uploaded every day to YouTube, all automatically dubbed into any potential language, there is no way any website could even compare or start taking market share from them. No way. Like, no way anyone is leaving this platform where you can find someone who lives in France making content in English, but that's automatically dubbed in, I don't know, Mandarin or Hindi or whatever else. You can't find that somewhere else. You can't find all that breadth of content. And I think it's a huge feature for YouTube. And personally, as a creator, it's also a huge feature for me. Because the only thing I have to do is fix the auto transcript from YouTube, which is generated from the English audio that I record myself. And obviously, since my English can be pretty weird, my accent is not perfect, and YouTube's auto script generator is also not perfect, there are a bunch of mistakes. So I would need to fix all of that. But once it's fixed, it's a good solid base to be used for any other language. And it means anybody can enjoy my videos into their favorite language from the same video. They could just click a little button, just like you change the speed of the playback or you change the quality of the video. You could also select the language and you're like, okay, just give me the Spanish version of this. And there's an automatic AI generated voice that will just read the transcript in time with the video, with the correct time codes and hopefully the correct intonations and accents. It will ruin a bunch of the jokes, it will not be coherent with the text displayed on screen and some stuff like that, because obviously the text will not be auto-translated, although they probably could try and do that in the future as well. But it's still a much better experience than a subtitle over a language you don't quite understand or you don't quite master. I think it's really a really good feature. I do not like AI, and I will need to look into how they plan to implement this. Are they going to recreate my own voice by training themselves with my own videos, or are they going to use generic, synthetic AI voices? I'm pretty sure it's going to be the latter, because it makes no sense to create one model of voice for each YouTuber ever on the platform. I don't think that's worth it. I think that's a lot of wasted computing cycles and effort. They'll probably have a few male voices, a few female voices, and for each language, and that's about it. And I think this will also be pretty much fine. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I just want the model they're going to use to be relatively ethical, built on data that was that they have consent to use, basically. So I'll be looking into that. And honestly, even if it's a pretty shitty way of collecting data, as long as it's not directly infringing on anybody's copyright, I'm pretty sure I will still be enabling it or using it by just improving the transcript, because I want my videos to be accessible to more people. And sure, it might not be done in the most ethical way or whatever, but in the end, if I don't collaborate, people will still get dubs of my videos, but they'll be super bad quality instead of good quality, and my protest is basically for nothing. So I will probably end up using that thing, even though it's AI and even though it's probably not super ethical, because for now, no AI tool really is built on an ethical data set. Now, of course, it won't be like a panacea. It won't be like the ultimate silver bullet to fix translating content into other languages, because as YouTube shown, their auto captions and auto subtitles are pretty terrible. For example, like subtitles in English for my videos are generally pretty bad, and I don't really have time to fix them, and I don't want to spend that time because it's just a subtitle. If it was a complete dub, then I would probably, yes, spend the time because it's much better for the user. And there's also the added problem of advertising. Would dubbed videos receive ads, or would they just be deemed to be lower quality? Because the transcript might not have been fixed, the AI voice might not be really good enough, and so maybe advertisers would not want to pay the same rates for a dubbed video as for a video in the native language. We don't really know all of this, but I think it's a good experiment. I think it's a good use of AI for once, and I really hope they build their dataset ethically to use this thing, but it's Google, so I won't hold my breath. Okay, now let's talk about the channel. So even during this vacation, my first week of vacation is now done. I'm entering the second one. I'll be going back to Brest in a few days on Friday. It's going to be the 4th, I think. And then I'll get back to work as soon as Saturday starts and Sunday and normally, basically. So it will have been basically 2 weeks of full holidays, apart from checking what the agency was making and making like the Linux news videos and these podcasts. But this is not a lot of work. It's relatively easy, and it's work I like, and it's fun, so it's no problem. It didn't feel like I was working. It really felt like I was on vacation. I really did not check the comments on my videos. I just checked the views like once a day, maybe. I did not answer many things on Mastodon. I tried to avoid getting into some weird conversations over there over topics that, could have bothered me. I was off, and it was nice. I was like completely off from work, and it was really cool. It really felt like a complete vacation for like already 1 week, but it feels longer than that, which is really cool. It's a good sign. So the channel is doing really well while I'm on vacation. I decided to split the videos. I was supposed to post 2 videos on the last week of July and just 1 video, well, 3 videos, 2 normal ones and 1 news video, and just a news video on the first week of August. But I decided to split this thing and use one of the videos from the end of July for the first week of August. So you'll see it on Wednesday. It was a conscious decision, but it also was because the agency could not deliver it in a level of quality that I found acceptable to publish it. So it all works out. I'll publish it on Wednesday. It will be good enough. It will be good. Well, it will be decent. It won't be the best video I ever made, but it will be decent. And I think it still covers the topic, the initial topic, pretty normally. They just had a lot of trouble to parse through my B-roll and use the right things. Basically, I had to give them the exact time codes for a few files, which, at that point, why do I need someone else to edit the video if I have to pick through the B-roll myself and give them the time codes? It makes no sense. I was not very happy with this last video. And after that, I can just resume working on my own without the agency to slow me down, which is definitely not what I wanted when I signed up with them. But yeah, it was an experiment. It didn't pan out. It's okay. July was a solid month. We've got some good view numbers, 1.7 million, good revenue, good feedback on the videos, 7,000 new subscribers. It's all really, really good. I'm very happy with July. Usually July sees a steep drop off in terms of views because, well, people go on holidays, but this year it's staying strong, which is really cool. I like it. And last week's videos are doing very well. The Mac video is already at 120,000 views. The news video is already at 48,000 after 2 days. It's also pretty good for a news video. I'm really happy. And on that note, I edited this news video on the MacBook Pro because I took this laptop with me on vacation. I took the MacBook Pro, not a Linux laptop. I've been without a Linux device for a full week, and I am not enjoying this, honestly. I am not enjoying using this laptop. Well, I made it clear in my video, but even using this right now is not fun. I am not having fun with it. Editing the news video took about 2 to 3 more hours than what I usually take, which really sucked. I had not edited a video on the go on that MacBook before. I had only edited videos plugged into my ultra-wide display with an external keyboard and mouse, which made the experience relatively similar to what I would have had on Linux. But on the go, with the MacBook Pro, it kind of sucked. I had to full screen resolve, obviously, because, well, maximizing on macOS is really not that much of a thing. So I full screened it. I managed to get the menu bar visible at all times, even though the option was absolutely not located where people told me it was, and I had to use like the search feature, trying a few different wordings to finally land upon it. It sucked. And then the full screen app was just not that usable, because to drag footage from it, I had to grab it from a file manager that was on another virtual desktop, I had to drag it to a hot corner, then wait for the hot corner to activate, go hover over the other desktop, wait for that to activate, and then drop my footage into Resolve. It was just so slow and not fun, and it just doesn't work well. It's not a good workflow. It's not a matter of getting used to it. It's just badly designed. So it took me a lot of time to get used to that. I also edited with an external mouse, and I remembered that the acceleration curve for the mouse pointer with the mouse, not with the touchpad. With the touchpad, the acceleration curve is great. With the mouse, it's all messed up. So I kept missing where I was clicking. It was not reacting how I wanted. It was just a nightmare. It was really bad. Really, really bad. But I managed to do it. It took me 2 to 3 more hours than what I usually take, but it's okay. Granted, that could also be attributed to the fact that I wasn't used to using this laptop on the go with an external mouse, but yeah, it's not intuitive, basically. I cannot wait to go back to my usual Linux laptop, my Executive 16, or to its potential replacement that I talked about last week, if Tuxedo sends the new Executive 16 to me, if I like it, and I decide to make it my main device. That's what's going to happen, and it will all be pretty good. As I said, if you didn't listen to the podcast last week, the goal is to replace my editing tower and also my current Executive 16 with just one newer Executive 16 with a 13th gen Intel CPU with an RTX 4060 with 32 gigs of RAM, faster storage, stuff like that. And just try to only use this device for all editing by just using the Thunderbolt ports to plug it into my display. It will charge it. It will connect to the USB hub in my display. Everything will be great. I'm going to try to do this, and it's probably going to be a great experiment. And I'll obviously make a video about this because, like, it's interesting to document how well you can work this way with Linux. Now, still, using the MacBook Pro, I got used to a few things. So first, like I said, I found the options that people told me about, but not where they told me these options were. So for example, the menu bar in full screen, apparently yes, there was an option to enable that, but it was not in dock and menu bar because this does not exist in the version of macOS I use. It was located in mission control. Where exactly, I can't quite remember, but typing just menu bar did not display anything useful in the settings. Typing menu, then a space, then bar worked, and then I had the automatically hide and show the menu bar option, which is hidden at the bottom of control center, not mission control, control center. And I've got automatically hide and show the menu bar, and I've got always on desktop only, in full screen only, or never. So I finally found it, and it's in a weird place that I could never have figured out by myself. And menu bar, written in one word, was not showing up, like, because, well, they didn't do their work on the keywords, basically. I had to figure out that you have to type menu space bar and not menu bar, which, come on, just give us the two ways of writing this. It's so dumb. But this was easy. The second one was tap to drag windows. And of course, typing tap to drag does not, or tap drag, or just drag, does not show anything that you want. Finally, you have to type dragging. And dragging is in accessibility settings, in the accessibility settings of pointer control. Because apparently dragging a window is pointer control, but it's not. It's window management. It's not how you control your mouse or your pointer. It's what you do with the pointer. So it has nothing to do in accessibility. It should be in the touchpad settings or the mouse settings. And it also has nothing to do with pointer controls. And then you have to click on a small button called trackpad options. And then there's dragging style. And I could select without drag lock. By default, it was not turned on. You have to turn on use trackpad for dragging. Why is this option so weirdly laid out and so hidden? I have no idea. It's not where it should be. And for copy and paste, which was my other thing that people reacted to saying, oh yes, you can cut and paste on macOS. Turns out, no, you can't. Not in the file manager. You can move a file. But this is done in the most stupid way I could ever see. Because you still have to first copy a file, which, as we all know, copy creates a duplicate of a file, does not offer you to move it. It's a copy. It's not move, it's copy. So you have to copy a file, and then you have to go to the folder where you want to copy it, or to paste it, and then you have to right-click and press the Option key. This changes some of the options in the right-click menu. Nowhere is that explained. It's never explained anywhere. It's not discoverable. You have no idea you can do that. But if you do it, then the paste command turns into a move command. This is insanely dumb. Why does it work this way? First, you can't find it. If you don't know, you can press the Option key. And I've been using a Mac like a long time in a previous job. I never even knew this existed because I never needed to know this existed. Because why? And so you have to figure out this exists. Then you have to press that thing, and then you have to understand that you need to copy a file to move it, which everyone knows copy and move are two different actions. Moving is not a follow-up action to a copy. It makes no sense. And on top of that, in the menu of the file manager, you've got the cut option. Why can't I click it? Why is there no keyboard shortcut for it? I don't understand why this is this way. It's baffling. And the whole OS is like this. Like, there are plenty of small, weird things that are laid out in exactly this way. They feel like holdovers from maybe macOS 7, 8, or 9 that maybe made sense when conventions weren't adopted everywhere. But nowadays, all other systems, even on iOS, you can cut. You can cut some text, you can cut a file. Why can't you do that on macOS? Why do you need to press keyboard shortcuts to have the option to move a file? If you want me to move a file, give me a move option in the right-click menu. I right-click the file I want to move, I click move or move to, and then you give me a file picker, and I select where I want to move it. Don't make me press a keyboard shortcut to get a move option that stems from copying the file, because it makes no sense on the desktop metaphor. It makes no sense with any other thing I could have learned, even on other Apple operating systems. I don't know why they do it this way. It's stupid. And I got a lot of comments saying, oh, you're just not used to the computer. It's because you're too used to something else. I used that MacBook Pro for 30 days, and I had used macOS for about 5 full years at work, for a long while. I know this system. It's not being unused to it. It's really options being impossible to find, or just convoluted and weird to use. I can find my way in KDE settings, and they are not the best laid out, because their search feature has the correct keywords that let you find what you're looking for. In Apple settings, the search does not have the right keywords for each option, which means that intellectually, if you don't know the exact name of a feature, you can't find it in the settings. It's just a bad user experience if you don't know macOS by heart or if you haven't used it for 10 years. It's just not great. So still, the laptop itself, I've warmed up to it. I think it's pretty decent. It's really well built. I've never used a laptop that feels so solid, that has no give in the middle of the keyboard. Everything sounds right. When you close it, the sound is great. When you type a key, the sound is great. When you click the trackpad, the sound is great. The feeling is not great because it's vibrating, it's not clicking, but the sound of the trackpad is great. The speakers are awesome. It's a really well built, it feels quality. Whenever you use it, it feels really quality. And this I can't take away from them. It's a really well built laptop. It feels like it's gonna last. It doesn't scratch. It's really, really good. And the performance just cannot be faulted either. Like this thing, I edited the news video on it on battery. It was not plugged in. I started with 67% battery. I edited for 4 hours. And when I was done, I was at 47% battery. I lost 20% of battery life while editing a 1080p 50 FPS video on battery with the display cranked up to the max, with Wi-Fi turned on, with DaVinci Resolve running. It's not even a specifically well-optimized program on macOS. It's not like it's an Apple program. So this means I could basically get about, what is that, 20 hours of video editing with this battery? It's insane. It's absolutely insane. And it performed perfectly. There were no stutters, no freezes, no nothing. Like, thumbnails of the video generated faster than on my main editing tower with an RTX 3070. It felt faster than my editing PC that I use at home with a Ryzen 7 5800X with 32 gigs of RAM compared to 16 on this one. I think there's only 16 on this one. Let me check that. Is there 16 or 32? 16, yeah. It's got 16 gigs. My editing rig has 32. It has a better CPU. Well, numbers, theoretically, should be a little bit better. It has, like, a way better GPU. It probably has slower storage. But, yeah, like, editing felt way faster, way better, and used virtually no battery. It's awesome. It's great to use. I just hate the operating system this thing runs. It's just so bad. So, in the future, I will obviously put Asahi Linux on this to replace macOS, because I see no value in keeping macOS around. I will probably create an install media so it's relatively easy to reinstall it if I ever need to, but I will definitely run Asahi on it as an Asahi test machine. I know it's not fully ready yet, and I know I will probably not move to this laptop as my main device anytime soon, but it will be interesting to see how well Linux runs and if it can keep those benefits of really high performance, really good battery life and stuff like that. So we're going to check this out in the future, probably not before September. It will probably be in September that I make videos about Asahi, but I think it will be fun. And of course, I would still prefer to use a laptop that officially supports Linux and that contributes to Linux's development. But none of the laptops from any of the Linux manufacturers I know or worked with or sent me like review units, none of them have 12, 14 hours of battery life and the same performance on battery than when they're plugged in. None of them do. They don't. They just don't. Like, the optimization and the CPU is just not efficient enough. And so, yeah, maybe it's going to make a great device running Asahi, but I will still feel weird running something from Apple with all the bad customer practices that they have. And on a phone, they all have these practices. So it's not that, like, yes, sure, you're buying a big piece of e-waste that cannot be repaired yourself, that Apple wants to lock down. It sucks. But all other Android manufacturers do the same unless you buy a Fairphone. But on a PC, you have plenty of choices that aren't as locked down, that are more upgradable, that are upgradable at all, that are repairable. Apple does not offer something like this. And so you still feel pretty weird using a device from somebody who's, well, from a company that's just unethical, basically. Unethical for their customers. That's for sure. But in the end, like, you have to use what works. And for now, what works for me is a Linux laptop. But at some point, if Linux gets really awesome enough on such an amazing device with great webcam, great speakers, great battery, great performance, I will cave in and I will probably run Linux on a MacBook Pro or whatever else. Maybe this MacBook Pro, maybe if it's in 5 years on another one, who cares? But at some point, maybe I will. If at least the x86 world hasn't caught up. So this will conclude this giant rant about macOS and the MacBook Pro. I don't know if I was clear and if I conveyed my meaning enough. I'm pretty tired. I went on a boat ride this morning with my father and my girlfriend. We were like 3 or 4 hours at sea. It was awesome, but it was really tiring, so I'm a bit tired. So I don't know if I made myself clear or not. You let me know. So if you have any questions, remarks, or tips about the YouTube translation thing, about the channel, about the MacBook Pro, about macOS, whatever, about the videos I published, let me know and we'll discuss them in the comments. And if not, well, I hope you'll have a great week. Thank you all for supporting the channel. Thank you all for listening to this episode. And I guess you will hear me in the next one. Bye!